Okay. Well, give me 1 second of my front over here. The phrases that we use in the Alanisim to describe all the adjectives of Klai Yisrael in contrast to the Avonim. So, one of them, perhaps maybe the most famous one, is Rabim Biad Ma'atim, many in the hands of the few. I know many people get very excited with that, but many in the hands of the few, Rabim Biad Ma'atim. So I think that we can understand Riboy and Miyot. It's not a drush on the Midash that addresses them, but I think we can understand the Midas of Rabim Biad Ma'atim almost in two different ways. We can understand it, like we have many, very often we have chakiras about whether something is a quantitative din or a qualitative din. Give some quick bechina questions. Who remembers some of the chakiras of the years? Okay, you remember, I'll give you extra credit, Lemafreya. There are still some guys who were still missing a couple of agrees, a couple of incompletes here and there over the years. So if you answer one or two right, we'll give you some credits. Okay, maybe that we should nix off the recording room. So Rabbi Yad Ma'atim, Rebu and Miyut, we can understand either quantitative or qualitative. So quantitative seems to be the Pashtus HaDvarim over here. That's referring to there were just literally a few handful of Jewish soldiers and an awful lot of Greek soldiers. But I think that Rabbi Yad Ma'atim also speaks a lot to us and really a lot to us at different stages in life, because Chazal, the famous phrase, Mishnah, the end of the Nachos, that Echad Amarba V'Echad Amayit V'Vad Shichav and Liv L'Shemayim. The Gemara comments, the Mishnah comments on different components that are brought, that sometimes a person can bring a very, very big korban, sometimes a person can bring a very, very small korban, and ultimately the korbanos are all a little ratzo, as long as you V'Vad Shichav and Liv L'Shemayim. So here, Echad Amarba V'Echad Amayit is not really talking about numbers in terms of multiple, not multitudes, it's talking about almost quality. Like a higher kind of a korban, a mehema in contrast to an oaf in contrast to a mincha. So it's talking a qualitative difference as well. So ribuy and miyut, I think, is critical for us in terms of Rabbi Yisrael Hashem. When Chazal make that statement, lechem arvech memayim v'vat shichav and liv l'shemayim, so that refers not just to korbanos, but it refers to all of Rabbi Yisrael Hashem, that Rabbi Yisrael Hashem is measured not just in terms of quantitative, but Rabbi Yisrael Hashem is very, very much measured in terms of qualitative as well. I think that perhaps, the greatest historical demonstration of this is the very existence of Bayi Sheni. Some of you may remember, we spoke about this probably once or twice at Chan Chagigas over the years, about the significance of Bayi Sheni, and actually the contrast Bayi Sheni to Bayi Rishon. So there's no question that Bayi Rishon had a lot of things that Bayi Sheni didn't have. Gemara lists them off. A list of five things that Bayi Rishon had in terms of a clear Ashras Ashtina, the Betumim, Vu, etc., a whole bunch of things that Bayi Rishon had, which Bayi Sheni Lamaisa didn't have. So in terms of, if we had to make an equation on the board, we would definitely have to call in who? Who's that? Talmud for that one? Come on, that's a trivia question for Shir.
Weinbach.
Is he on? Is Weinbach on? I don't see him on. Okay, so if we would have our equation inequality on the board, so those were not in the Shir. We have two live members. I don't know what I'm talking about, so don't worry about it. Okay, but if you have two things trying to express that one is greater than the other, it's fairly obvious that Bayi Rishon was greater than Bayi Sheni. It's hands down, not even a question. And yet, Bayi Sheni had a gewaldig schus to it. Bayi Sheni had a nace that even Bayi Rishon didn't have. Bayi Sheni had a zah nace of the Pach Hashem and a zah nace of the menorah, which the Ramban writes in Parshas Bal Oscha, was a chelik of Bayi Sheni that lasted the Olam Vod. That Bayi Rishon, we don't have anything from Bayi Rishon. There's no zeichah, there's no nothing of Bayi Rishon. Bayi Sheni, we have a physical remembrance of Bayi Sheni. We have the kosel that the Medrash and Shashirim says, as the Kadosh Baruch Hu has promised us, that there'll always be a physical reminder of Bayi Sheni until the Mehemi Banim Bikdash of Bayi Shlishi. And there's also a spiritual reminder of Bayi Sheni that the mitzvah of Adlachas HaMenorah remains in our hearts and souls. Each and every Hanukkah, we reconnect to the mitzvah of Adlachas HaMenorah, the Adlachas HaMenorah of Bayi Sheni. So what was it about Bayi Sheni that somehow had the special merit, the special chus to last for Dairi Dairis? So, over the years, we developed a different society, and I think it's important for Chazor at this point, that what Bayi Sheni had that Bayi Rishon didn't have was, it had an unbelievable degree of Mesiris Nefesh. But Bayi Rishon, pretty much everything came pretty easily. That the Shas HaShchina was so intense, and everything was going well, and Kaisel didn't really have to work all that hard, and there were Nevi'im around, and everything was pretty. For those who wanted to be Evan Ben Azara, that was available also. But for those who wanted to find a Shras HaShechina, it really was not very, very difficult to do. He just came to the Beis HaMikdash, and it was there right in front of your very eyes. Bei Sheni, things were not so partial. Bei Sheni, first of all, politically, Bei Sheni was very difficult. The Jews were 90% of Bei Sheni, they were under foreign domain, except for the very, very short window of the Malchus Chashmonoi, because that was far from perfect. There was no Ashuras HaShechina, and many of the parts of the Beis HaMikdash weren't even there. And we even know that when the second Beis HaMikdash was built, so those who remembered Bei Rishon were crying because they realized it just wasn't Imamus wasn't the same. It was something clearly, clearly lacking. And yet, Bei Sheni had a tremendous amount of Mesivas Nefesh, because everywhere you turn, Kleistel had to work hard. It was difficult to build Bei Sheni. There were a lot of obstacles along the way. Bei Sheni was a cinch to build. Shlomo HaMelech ran a whole major building campaign. It was over in a couple of years, and it was a joke. It was so easy. Everything went so smoothly. The Goyim were helping. Everyone was helping. Everyone was building. It was a grandiose project. Everyone wanted to be involved. Bei Sheni it was a real disaster. Every time they started, they had to stop. They started, they stopped. The Kusim shepherd them, the Persian shepherd, everywhere they were turning was a disaster. And then when they finally got it all built together, it was garnish from garnish. It was nothing. It wasn't so beautiful to begin with. And everywhere along the way, they had the Mesivas Nefesh. But there's something about Mesivas Nefesh that when we work on something very, very hard, so that gives it a kayama. That gives it ultimately something that's going to last. And I think that was a great secret of Aishen. That was a great secret of the Nase of Hanukkah. The Nase of Hanukkah was Mesivas Nefesh. And when you have Mesivas Nefesh, so then taka, what appears to be a davar muach, what appears to be very, very small, perhaps quantitatively, takes on an amazing qualitative edge, and ultimately is able to carry the day, and ultimately able to last forever. I think that difference between quantitative avodas Hashem and qualitative avodas Hashem is very, very much, you know, speaks to everybody on this call, myself included. Now, you know, there were tkufas in our lives. There were times in our lives where we had very, very little challenges and very, very little things that to distract us from our avodas Hashem. You know, whether the years that we were in yeshiva back in Eretz Yisrael, even the years that we were back in yeshiva, you know, in Washington Heights, and we had to do a little work here and there, you know, in between. But you know, we had a Beis Medrash to fall back on. We had a full-fledged morning seder. We had a afternoon. We had a shir. Until 3 o'clock, we were Mali Begundish and Torah, and even we took a little bit of a break in between for a few hours, and we came back to a full-fledged night stadium, and we had many of us stayed Shavuos in yeshiva, and some of us even stayed, made a semester in yeshiva, some even rose to the challenge and stayed in something that used to be called Junzman in the yeshiva. Baruch Hashem, still called Junzman in yeshiva. It's those who were not with us for this past Junzman, so we had more Tavinim than we ever had, and all the Junzmans combined together. Actually, because nobody else had anything else to do this Junzman. It was a Gavalk, very, very successful Junzman. So we had all these very, very easy avenues of it. Now, as I'm looking around, and I see, and I know, and I speak to many of you, Baruch Hashem, have still kept up, and you know, want to continue to keep up. And I know that we're all facing challenges, myself included, that we don't have that sometimes we don't always have the Menuchas HaNefesh, to have the Beis Medrash right next to us, and have the, you know, Mokum Torah right next to us. We're working, and Baruch Hashem, we're raising families. We're doing wonderful things. We're doing what we should be doing. We're making a parnasa. We're trying to keep afloat in Avodas Hashem. And for the most part, Avodas Hashem is Mesivas Nefesh. Avodas Hashem is harder now. And it's a challenge to get up to go to Minyan when we have to get to work. And it's you know, we don't always have that luxury of davening at the 8:45 illegal Minyan in, you know, in the bottom of a morgue or something. So we have to be at work by 9 o'clock. So tough luck, means you gotta get up early. And we don't have that the 4 hour morning seder. And then if we're lucky, you know, we had a couple of minutes here and there to chop around a daf yomi, chop around a little short seder or something. And it's hard, it's challenging. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks down at us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, looks at us and sees, wow, even though we're working hard and we're trying to support ourselves and we're trying to advance in our careers and we're trying to do Hashem, which are all good and healthy and wholesome things. But we find the time for learning and we find the time for davening, find the time for Vedas Hashem and all different shapes and forms. So it may not be as quantitative as it was 5, 10, 15 years ago. But qualitatively, no doubt, it's very, very meaningful. And ultimately, that Mesivas Nefesh that we put in, forever. This is Hashem at this stage in our life that will most probably carry us forever. So I continue to give everybody a wonderful, wonderful bracha. You continue to grow. Mechayel, ochayel, and your Torah, and your mitzvahs, and your Avodas Hashem. And hopefully we'll be able to mechazek each other. So these little events here and there are really good because they give an opportunity to be mechazek each other, mechazek myself. Gives me a lot of chiyus, you know. Me to see Baruch Hashem, see Tamidim, 5, 10, 15, some almost 20 years already, you know, down the line in life. So Baruch Hashem is a tremendous, tremendous chizuk for me. So without further ado, I guess we'll open it up, Ruth. So you tell me how we're doing. You're reading the questions. You're hosting the questions. I don't know, this is too complicated.
I'll read the questions. I'll read the questions that I have, and then when I finish them, we'll see.
We'll open up to other questions.
Okay. Open up. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. So, I reserve the right not to answer any question like usual.
Okay. So we'll start with maybe some lighter questions. Someone asked, Mr. Schenker asked, Moser Shemen, all the Hakbadas and Moser Shemen and not to throw down things like that. Why is it, and the wicks, why is it different than Ner Shabbos? It's also set aside for a mitzvah. Why don't we say the same thing there?
Neir Shabbos, the Shemen of Neir Shabbos is Mutav Hanor. You're allowed to be benefited. Neir Shabbos is always to benefit from. The din of Neir Shlo Kedishim is only on Neir Hanukkah. I think so.
All right, another Hanukkah question was asked.
Great questions. If this is all there is, you can record this part.
Well, starting warm-ups. They're warm-ups.
Warm-up, okay.
Warm-ups.
Okay,
then
we get to Earth-shattering questions.
Yeah, that's usually the mahal. At least I can control the order here. Okay. Someone said they didn't see this discussed in the post, and they wanted to know if someone didn't say Shechiyonu on the first night because someone lived for them, so their family lived for them, let's say he was flying. So should he say Shechiyonu when he lights on the second night?
Yeah, that's it. The pashtus advarim is that if he was already yotzei the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah through the lighting of his family, he was taught from say Shechiyanu anymore. His family was yotzei. Is it part of the same achlekes with the yotzei shasanisim with the bracha of your wife? Is it the same shaila? Should it be the same shaila pashtus, right?
I think the poskim, if someone forgot Shechiyanu on the first night.
If you forgot, then you can make it up. Yeah. Then you wonder why.
So why? This, why this would is, that
this
be
is
different?
Worse? Because here Shechiyanu was already set on your hadlaka. So it's like l'moshel as machlekes every shanim, whether the din of brichas haroa applies if someone's matlit l'abasot beisa, right? So it's a steven shulchan aruch. One place shulchan aruch quotes Mordechai, one quotes other shanim. So let's assume the suffering brichas la'akel that brichas haroa doesn't apply. They already matlit l'abasot beisa. That would mean that you don't make Shechiyanu either on the first night when you see other candles, right? I don't know. Let's take a look. Okay, remember for next year. Gotta remember.
Okay. All right, now someone asked, what does Rebbe suggest learning with our daughters, if at all, okay? And choosing what to learn with our sons seems to be easy.
There's so much to learn with our daughters. I think there's a Ramah in Uchas Tamat Torah that says that we should teach our daughters how to keep all the mitzvahs. So I think there are a lot of mitzvahs. We've said many, many times in Hashia, there are 630 mitzvahs, and only six of them Chazal considered to be mitzvahs Hashia's man grama. Maybe there's a one or two more that you can throw into the mix. So out of 607 mitzvahs, there seem to be an awful lot to learn with our daughters. So we're supposed to teach our daughters how to observe the mitzvahs properly. We should teach our daughters Chumash, we should teach our daughters Tanakh, we should teach them Hashkafa, we should teach them Makshava, we should teach them, you know, how to be good Jewish, good Neshechayel. So there's a lot of things to teach our daughters.
And I guess the regular rule of Mashli B'chavetz in terms of amongst all those things would set the
direction. A little smattering of everything, yeah.
Okay. Rebbe was talking about a job before. Is it a Jewish value to enjoy your job and feel like you're making a difference in the world? Is it better to have a job that you enjoy and feel fulfilled, but you work very hard with very long hours? Or a job that you don't enjoy, but have more flexibility and learning, time with your family, etc.
But this is like one of those qualitative, you know, questions. If a person, it depends what that means. If a person has a miserable job and he's just walking around miserable all day, so then when he comes home at, you know, 6, 7 o'clock at night, he's not going to be in like this unbelievably great mood and just sit and steig away and read a Tosafot for the next 4 hours. He's going to scream at his wife and he's going to get into a fight with his kids. and he's going to be just a miserable person. So if a person, that's not very much to enhance your Avodas Hashem. So if you're not going to be in a good mood, so it's going to be really, really hard to be a good Avodas Hashem. So I would not recommend for a person to be this big tzaddik and say, I'm going to take a miserable job that I can't stand and learn for an extra 10 minutes. It's not going to work. It's going to be so a person, of course, should enjoy what he's doing. If he enjoys what he's doing, he'll give him a chizuk, he'll be in a better mood, he'll be in a much better position in terms of his general love and discussion.
And is that the kind of, I guess it's a, part of the question was, you know, feeling like you're making a difference, you know, what are the klalim people should have in mind in looking at Parnassa?
When this Kala Nakia should find himself an honest job, he should find himself a job that he's going to be able to function in the rest of the parts of it. Hashem, and obviously he has to get Sipuk and Nefesh from it. The guy doesn't want to be a lawyer, so don't be a lawyer. Don't want to be a businessman. You're not going to gain down the line. You end up just, you know, being miserable, and then you're going to end up switching jobs. It's going to cost you more time down the line. You know, life is a marathon. Life is not a 90-yard sprint or something. So you have to plan life that way, that you make decisions that are going to have good long-term impacts also. So if you're going to go into a miserable job, and if the 3 years you're going to be back in school, that's not a very, very smart strategy.
How long should I hold off on the COVID questions? We have a few of them, but...
Nothing to talk about, but I'll be happy to talk about.
Okay. What's Rebbe's view on the Israeli Day Parade? Really? Non-COVID times.
I think we better start moving into the crossing out the recording.
Okay. Fine. A COVID question. What is the appropriate...
I don't want to answer the question. Just I think we should, might as well... Let's nix the recording. That's all.
Oh, nix the recording. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah.
Okay. Stop the recording.